with the third pick in the 2019 NBA draft, the New York Knicks select RJ Barrett.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Draft Strickland, the greatest spinoff pod in the history of spinoff podcasts. It's me, your host, at underscore Presidente, aka Prez, aka Paywall P, aka Banco Popular. And we're here to talk about the most fun draft that was ever discussed, the 2018 NBA draft, where I would say, as Theo just said before we started recording, our illustrious guest Theo, writer on the Strickland, the Kevin Knox draft. The infamous Kevin Knox draft. But before we get into the specifics, I just want to let y'all listening know that, as you could tell from my AKAs, we have Patreon, however you say that shit, that you can go to get extra Strickland basketball coverage and other cool discounts on merchandise. Depending on what tier you subscribe to, you get access to special podcasts, including the podcast where I am Schwinn's co-host, our weekly Pod Strickland episode. There's still tons of free stuff out there, so you know, we didn't put everything behind the paywall, but for those of you who are really into supporting the site as it grows, there's lots of cool stuff over there, so check it out. You may have heard some cackling in the background. That was the other guest we have today, none other than Schwinny Poo himself. Schwinn, how are you?
I'm good. Having a nice cup of tea right now.
Very good, very good. and then we have Theo at, I'm going to mess this up, at Sands with three Z's, is it?
I can't remember how many Z's.
At SANDZZZO. That's three Z's.
Yeah. Pretty sure after you finish typing the second one, it'll pop up.
There you go. Theo Sands, draft mind extraordinaire. And they're here to go on this journey back in time with me. And before we get into any particular player, I just want to set the stage for where we were all at as a Knicks community. We were fresh off of the 2017 draft, right? We have Kristaps. We have Frank Ntilikina. Phil Jackson is gone, right? Our team is still not good, but
this draft is just a terrible process from the Knicks. Like, every... I'm sorry. I don't care about your framing of it. I just got to say it. Every part of this is just terrible process. Like I can't even... I mean, where do you start? Okay, they clearly... Okay, Phil's gone. Mills and Perry are there. They fire Hornacek at the end of the year. And then they hire Fizdale. So they clearly, by that point, by the end of that first season, even though it was Frank's rookie season, they had decided he was not a point guard. They didn't see him as a point guard. They didn't want to develop as a point guard. Hell, they didn't want to develop him. They didn't want to develop anybody because they didn't have a fucking plan. So they decide this. But also, for some reason, they go into this draft saying they want a wing. They're only thinking about wings. They're not worried about anything else. So right off the bat, like, they're basically telling you they think Emmanuel Mudiay is the point guard of the future, maybe? Or Trey Burke, which, okay, like, terrible logic, but okay, fine, you roll with that, and then you narrow it down to just wings. And that's stupid because you shouldn't narrow yourself down when you're a terrible basketball team. Here's the thing. There were great wings in this draft. There were very, very productive wings that they could have drafted. They decided, for some unknown reason, because Kevin Knox randomly had the game of his life in a one-on-one workout with Miles Bridges. I can't
with Worldwide West The more information we get about this infamous workout, the more stupid it is. We've now learned that A, he's beat Miles Bridges in a game of one-on-one. B, New York State of Mind, the worst Jay-Z song, was also playing in the background. D, I might have skipped a letter. I'm so mad. C, D, whatever. World Wide West took his shirt off at one point, I think.
Who knows? The entire thing about this makes no sense. Did Miles just not want to be a Nick? Because I cannot imagine a scenario where Kevin Knox is just working Miles Bridges in 1v1.
I can. He just probably got hot from shooting and just made a bunch of fucking jump shots one afternoon.
He dominated
Bridges. Yeah. They didn't say he beat him. He dominated him.
Yeah, he dominated him. That's the thing. He dominated.
And Miles couldn't shoot back then, remember?
Yeah, but he could have just been brolic and
You gotta remember Miles was coming off of a season where he was mostly standing in the corner and cutting baseline. He hadn't developed into how to use his strength yet.
Yeah. So
yeah, those robotic dribble moves too.
So the last thing they're locked in on Mikal Bridges the entire time. Okay, they're basically locked in on Mikal Bridges, which if you're gonna have a terrible process and horrible logic, good kudos to you. Good solid pick. Prez knows this. I was not a huge Miles Bridges fan, or Mikal Bridges fan, leading up to that draft. But ultimately, I was like, you know what?
You solid came player. Around.
Yeah, solid player, solid pick. He's going to be a 12-year NBA veteran. Take him and move on. For some reason, because of this workout, this change, and because David Fizdale apparently told them Kevin Knox was a ball of clay that he desperately wanted to mold.
That's the guy.
They let their coach influence their draft process, not influence it, but basically completely change their opinion of it, which is awful. And they make this pick of Kevin Knox, who ends up I'm not even trying to shit on the kid. I feel bad for him. He was thrust into a terrible situation for whatever his flaws are, and he never had a chance here because of the people who picked him and their lack of care for what actually was required to get the best out of Kevin Knox. But you look at that pick now, and it's just so much more indefensible to me than the Frank pick. No matter how you feel about the Frank, Frank as a player, that pick inherently had a lot more logic and decent thinking and process to it than Knox. And Knox is I feel bad for him, but how many wings are better than him from that draft that were drafted after?
It depends how you define wings, but the answer is probably all of them.
I'm going to shut up now, but I just needed to get that out 90%. Because they also decided that even though they didn't think Frank was the point guard of the future, that they absolutely should not work out Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who apparently was dying to work out for them and dying to be a New York Knick. So that's great. And I really love reliving that every single time Kevin Knox's name comes up.
Yeah, on the bright side, we did get Mitchell Robinson. I will say that. So in my head, Mitchell Robinson was our lottery pick, and Kevin Knox was the random guy who dropped. So it is what it is. But I know this is technically a Knicks pod, but I really feel like, Schwinn, you pretty much said all there was to say about the insane Kevin Knox pick. Theo, is there anything else you want to add about that?
Schwinn said it perfectly. I don't know what else I could even really say. I was not a Knox fan leading up to the draft. I remember, I think I read a few articles, and they were basically the dude had no strengths whatsoever. The one strength was he was 18 at the time, right? So he was one of the youngest players there in the draft. I was actually a big Miles Bridges fan. I felt like he had a down sophomore year compared to his freshman year. I thought he had a lot of potential as a 3-and-D guy with some creation mixed in. So I felt he could have been the guy at 9. I was not a huge fan of Mikal Bridges. I remember Shrimp wanted him, though. I do remember that. but to me, he just seemed like a boring player. We already had Frank.
He definitely was a boring player.
I didn't want two boring players in back-to-back drafts. So.
the rare boring player that I was not enamored by.
Yeah. But, in hindsight, obviously, he's a boring player that made a lot of sense. So
Yeah.
But the consensus was nobody wanted Knox.
Let's talk a little bit about
real quick. I want to say this. The amazing thing about this draft for the Knicks is as little illogical processes they had, and terrible process, non-existent process perhaps that they had in picking Knox. Their process for picking Mitch was great. Like,
oh yeah,
if you read about it, it's great because Mills was sitting there apparently in the draft room right the night of, and they had, you know, there was a rumor that the Lakers had promised Mitchell Robinson, who that was, you know, that's been reported several times. Who knows why they ended up going with Mo Wagner. But you know, that's what they did. And like the thing, I just remember thinking about and reading about it, and like Mills was sitting there like, should we trade up? And Perry's like, no, dude, like, relax, like, we're fine, like, we don't need to do anything. And it's like, they, you know, they found a guy who was a, you know, an elite high school prospect who had a very weird set of circumstances his 1 year in college where he basically didn't play, and like they let him come to them on the board, and they stood there, they were patient, and they took him, and they like, and they had a plan for him, actually. Like, if you listen to, like, the things they said after they drafted him, they were like, yeah, he's raw. Like, we want to take our time with him. And, like, they did have a plan for him. And they actually, you know, like, unlike Knox, they did get a vet. I mean, their logic obviously wasn't to get DeAndre Jordan to help Mitchell Robinson, but, like, that's the way it worked. But, like, and maybe it was a fluke. But, like, they ended up doing a decent job of developing him. And, like, consistently through his career, he's had good vets to learn from, right? Like, he's had DeAndre Jordan, he's had Taj Gibson now, and, you know, whatever. But like, it's kind of amazing that they nailed that, but just completely messed up the Knox pick.
Yeah, they were like, I mean, we've talked about this before, but like, that front office viewed everything through this weird lens of like, how hard do we have to squint for someone to be a star, right? Like, narrowly defined as like a guy who can create their own shot and vaguely looks like other stars. So for Mitch, it's like, oh, this guy was a McDonald's All-American, and he's falling to us, and people are sleeping on him because he didn't play in college. And for Knox, it's like, you know, oh, he's so young, but his jump shot is so good, and he's already this tall now, and he beat Miles Bridges, an older player, in a workout who's more developed than him. Da, 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 da. So, like, it was... With Mitch, it was like the right process for the wrong reasons almost, but that's better than Knox, which is the wrong process for the wrong reasons.
Final next question. If they had gotten the number one pick, who were they taking?
Oh, fuck, man. They're probably taking Ayton.
Yeah, I think they take Ayton.
Yeah.
What do you think, Theo?
Yeah, definitely they take Ayton.
That front office? Shit. Yeah. So, real quick, like, we'll get into the top of the draft for a second, but I do want to talk a little bit about that middle area just to see, like, how y'all were feeling back in the day. We talked a little bit, like, so Macau, like, everybody was feeling, ah, this guy's boring. He's not the home run swing, but he's solid. Theo, you said you were high on Miles. Schwinn, how were you about Miles? I don't remember.
Miles? I was like, I liked him. I pretty much was at the point where I was like, take McCall or Miles. I preferred McCall. And then because the Knicks, there were rumors that the Knicks were going to take Kevin Knox like the 2 days leading up to the draft, I immediately retroactively decided Knox should definitely be in that group, and it'd be a great pick if they picked him at nine. But yeah, like, I mean, leading up to it, I was pretty much McCall and Miles. And actually, this is a draft where I learned, and maybe it doesn't always work, sometimes you're wrong, but this is a draft where I decided, like, I should just stick with my gut and go with what I think, because I loved SGA after that NCAA tournament. I was like, this kid could be a star. I remember, I think I talked to you about him, Prez, and we were talking about, like, is he, like, and, you know, there's all these concerns, like, he's skinny, like, we drafted Frank, blah, blah, and it's like, yeah, but, like, maybe just look at where the league was going and how important just, like, guys that can play together, right? Like, the entire idea of a player like Frank, in theory, was that he can play on and off ball. So why would you care if SGA is a lead guard, right? Because, like, they should be able to play together. And also, like, I just kind of chickened out because SGA had kind of a weird trajectory, right? Like, he was coming off the bench initially at Kentucky, and then they put him into the starting lineup because they kind of had to, because the entire, like, run the offense through Kevin Knox thing, surprisingly, wasn't working too well. And I just, like, loved him as a prospect, but then, you know, the draft process goes on, the season ends, and you're kind of like, you know, I mean, shit, that COVID season where we had, like, 7 months to just analyze the same 60 guys was insane. But like that happens all the time. You kind of outthink yourself. And I kind of chickened out of having SGA where I thought he should go because it was like, well, like nobody else seems to think he's this high. So maybe I'm just wrong. But yeah, I mean, that was like it's a good learning thing, even though I'm not doing draft stuff anymore.
Theo, did you have thoughts on SGA back then?
I did. Like Shrin said, I watched him in the NCAA tournament, and then I saw how, like, as soon as Kentucky actually inserted him into the starting lineup, their whole season sort of basically took a 180. So, like, I put stock into that, but it was weird because it's like he didn't fit the prototypical, I guess, NBA guard type of, you know, prototype, I guess. You know, he could have really got to the rim, but his jump shot wasn't all the way there. He had nice handles, but it wasn't like super shifty. So I sort of like, I think I overthink that one a bit. You know, I just thought that he wasn't a prototypical NBA guard. So I knew he would help a team, but I just didn't know how good he would be. That makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, totally. I learned two big lessons from SGA. One is like, definitely don't overthink. Like it's important to think how a player gets to their numbers because his numbers are great. But I was at the same time, I was like, this motherfucker has an ugly ass jump shot. He looks like he needs like 10 cheeseburgers. I don't know how any of this is going to work. All the Canadians are whack at the time, right? So I'm like, I don't know what's going to go on here.
But Jamal Murray the only like good Canadian in the league at that point?
Wiggins was looking very suspicious.
So like I said, Jamal Murray was the only good Canadian in the league at that point.
I think so.
Yeah. Murray was nice, but he wasn't this good.
Right, exactly. So, but then looking back, I'm like, not only like, okay, don't worry so much about how they get to their numbers, but looking at some of the numbers, it's like in this, like his free throw rate was like 45%, which is a crazy number for a guard. Yeah. And I didn't know any of that shit back then. And looking at this draft, you look at another guy, Colin Sexton, who went 8 to Cleveland, who was another one who like, I remember having conversations with Schwinn where Schwinn was like, I don't know about this no defense questionable shot having dude, but he seems like a maniac and he always seems to be like crazy in a good way and he gets to the rim a lot. And that might be a reason why he does better than expected. And you look at his free throw rate and it was something similar. It was like through the roof. So like this is the draft where statistically I was like, okay, Julian, like don't be a dum-dum. Look at that shit for ball handlers. And if it's through the roof, like they can figure out the rest later. That's a big
was this?
One.
Was this Trey or was this
Sexton? Actually? Sexton.
Oh, Sexton. Yes. Yeah,
I mean Trey as well. But I was already fully on the Trey bandwagon. So.
Yeah, I was fully on Trey.
Yeah, you were definitely huge on Trey. I was like, I saw the vision. I was really scared of it though. Like I knew he wasn't going to be taking it. Like he was going to go before 9. So like yeah, I kind yeah. of never really had to have strong thoughts on it, other than like. Shout out to Latvian Prankster if he's listening. Oh my out god, there.
I got so many. Well, we both. I got in so many arguments with that motherfucker. But like low key, we both kind of won because he was. I also was like extra shitting on Colin Sexton back then, and he was very high on Colin, higher than Colin. He had Colin ahead of Trey, just like the Cavs did. Like I wish I tried to find it the other day, but there was a leaked big board photo of the Cavs big board for back then, and Sexton was like. Number like 3 or 4 or something crazy like that.
Yeah, I mean Sexton has definitely. I mean, I didn't like Sexton very much either. But like you said, like the one thing I just liked about him was everything you heard about him, read about him, knew about him. Basically, was like this dude is gonna like die in the gym. Like he he's going to just live there. And guys like that are ones to bet on. Like and whatever their flaws, and Colin has plenty of flaws. Like you know, I hope he ends up in a good situation at some point. I don't think Cleveland is the spot for him, but like. I do think he's a player like, you know, I mean, I'm guilty of this too, like winning player or whatever. Like, is he a winning player in his role in Cleveland? No. Can he be a winning player in the right role somewhere else? Yeah, absolutely. Like, he's definitely shown that. And he's shown, like, serious growth in his game year after year. You know, like the stuff he, I mean, what, he averaged 24 a game on 58 true shooting last year. Like, that's not a joke. Like, that's, especially for a guard his size, like, that's really legit impressive stuff.
And then you look at, like, it's so funny just like looking at what we know now. Like, I just was curious, and like we know now a lot about, like, okay, what was their college situation? Like, how does that impact how they got their numbers? And now we know, like, Alabama is like point guard university. Every point guard who comes out of there is pretty good now. But like, you look back then and you look at his stats, and like, the first thing that jumps out at me, I'm looking on hoopmath.com, 30% of his threes were assisted. That is a tiny number. That's basically like none. That's basically like he was doing all the three-point shooting himself. So, of course, that number is going to be – his three-point percentage is going to be low. So it's like, I definitely should have given him more credit for doing what he did with that particular team. Like, I remember hating – like, liking but hating that crazy game where he was playing 3-on-5 or whatever because of the suspensions.
Yeah, that was insane.
Yeah, so, I mean, he definitely showed me – I don't regret my process too much, but like, I do. This was one of the drafts where I was like, okay, maybe I should factor in like that, like intangible, like give a shit a little more.
Yeah, I mean, this is a draft I actually feel like I learned a lot about. I had some good takes, some bad takes. Everybody has those. But like, the guy, I'm not ashamed at all to admit it. I was completely wrong on DeAndre, and like totally, completely, utterly, stupidly wrong about him. I was really, really worried about his motor. That was like a concern, I know, not for just me, but for a lot of people.
I know Theo over there shaking his head.
I sort of share the same concern. I did not think he, like, okay, it was weird because at the time, I think that the prospect he was most likely compared to as of recent was like Karl Towns in terms of like skill on offense. And then we saw Karl Towns transition from being like a dominant defensive player in college to this subpar dude when he reached the league. And it was like, is Ayton going to suffer that same fate? Because he really wasn't good in college defensively. And like, you saw flashes of him being a rim protector, but you didn't know how would it actually come together. The skills were there offensively. So I wouldn't have picked him number one, but then I think, like Shrin said, you're sort of overthinking it. The dude does have the physical attributes to actually be able to protect the rim if he could actually get the right guys in place to like show him what to do. So
yeah, and I think
it wouldn't have been New York.
No, it wouldn't have been New York. No, but I think he's like the rare one. It's like, look, like one of the, I mean, whether right or wrong, you know, big guys with motor concerns are always like, that's like, you know, I have flashbacks of watching Eddie Curry, right? Like I, that stuff always is worrisome, like big guys' motor concerns. But I think with him, and this is interesting, like, you know, Presnos is, I put a lot of stock into like, does this guy like get, quote, air quotes, it? I didn't know if he got it. But like, you know, looking back at it, you know, some of the stuff, like the way he talks, I think he comes across as he doesn't care. When like, if you really look at what he's saying, I think he's just like very matter of fact. And like, I mean, you see this now when he talks, like, I think somebody asked him around that time, like, what he would consider success as a number one pick. And he said something like getting that second contract. That's what he said when he got drafted, I'm pretty sure. And
that's bringing like, the culture.
Yeah. And it's like, yeah, right. Exactly. And it's like, you know, obviously I'm, this might be a shock to people. I'm not very well versed in Bahamian culture. but like that, like when you read that, it sounds like, dude, so all this guy gives a shit about is money, but you, like, you watch how he's progressed in his career, right? Like, this is a guy who has, you know, you mentioned the comparisons to Karl Anthony Towns. He's punted on, I mean, he's been a willing team player in the sense of he is not bitched and pouted and whined that he's not getting those type of offensive touches, especially the last year, right? Like, he could have, a lot of players wouldn't be able to deal with that. He dealt with it, and he actually found ways to be, in my opinion, still worth the max that Broke Boy Sarver won't give him, you know, with his growth in everything else, right? Like, as a defensive player, like, as a teammate, as kind of just like a willing cog offensively who still finds a way to get you 16 and 10, even though they're not running plays for him. Like, all this kind of stuff is really meaningful, And if you just, like, that quote, right, that screams, like, oh, all this guy wants to do is get his numbers. But then you kind of just see how he progressed, and it's like, yeah, like, what he said makes sense, right? Like, it is a success if you're the number one overall pick and you get a second contract, which is a max. Like, of course. Like, I think he's almost saying, like, if I deserve that max contract, right? Like, versus just getting it. And you kind of see how his career has played out. And obviously, look, there's no question that getting Monty Williams has been a huge help for him, just for his development. Monty's always been a really good development coach with big guys. And, like, that helps. But, like, you know, that's like anybody. Like, and nobody gets there by themselves, right? Like, everybody gets a little bump from somebody. Everybody gets help from somebody. And he took that help, and he's really developed into, like, the type of player. You know, did any of us think that he was going to be this elite defensive anchor who could play all kinds of different defensive schemes by year three of his career? I definitely didn't.
I think it's fair to say, like, he had outlier development, which is just, like you said, like, a kudos to him and the people he had around him.
Yeah, like, I mean, his development is crazy, especially, like, you know, I again, I'll say this, still my son, I still believe in him. Wendell Carter Jr. was, like, my big guy in that draft. But, like, you know, if you had told me that Ayton was going to just care about defense, I'd have been like, well, maybe, actually. It would have changed it, because, like you said, Theo, like, his physical attributes are, it's a prime example of myself and a lot of people, I think, overthinking it to a degree, and probably applying too much value on things he said and did versus, like, you know, what he was and how willing he was to adapt.
Was he in y'all's top five, or do you not remember?
I'm positive he was not in my top five.
I had him at 2. I'll look. I just wouldn't have dropped him ahead of him.
Just off the top of my head, I know for sure I would have had Luka, Jaren Jackson Jr., Wendell Carter Jr., Marvin Bagley, and Trey over him. So I don't know. I don't even have a board from that. But, like, I know he wouldn't have been in my top five.
Let's talk a little bit about the Magic bigs, Wendell and Bamba, because I really need to talk about how much Schwinn loves Wendell Carter Jr. and B, about Harlem's own Mo Bamba perpetrating the greatest pre-draft public relations marketing campaign in the history of NBA basketball. This guy was giving it. go ahead.
It was crazy to watch, man. I mean, I watched him a few of his interviews. He was on The Jump. I think he was on First Take. They were asking dude, how good does he want to be and how good does he think he's going to be? And they were really hyping him up to be the next great NBA big. And I was like, wow. This dude is not that good. I watched him and I was not impressed whatsoever. Like, he had no vertical pop. He was not a good rim roller. He amassed a lot of block shots, but that was mainly because he had a freakish wingspan. Like, I just didn't see any athletic tools that suggested he would be a good player.
Theo's just
no applause, Lisa.
He was just a blunt uncle. You know, I just didn't think he was good.
Okay. Yeah. Dude, that shit almost worked on me. I ended up, like, not being budged for the same reasons. But, like, I just remember, because they were doing the shit that is, like, the way to get Prez in your corner without using facts. Like, they was talking to him about Harlem and New York City in the summer. And I was like, oh, man, this guy gets it. This guy gets it. But then you watch him play and you're like, nah, he don't get it.
I mean, look, here's the thing. Like, I didn't like him as a prospect. I was, like, pretty vocal about it, too. I just didn't get it. Like, okay, he can block shots. He's really tall. I get the physical tool stuff. You know, Hashim Thabeet was a big guy, too. Like, I don't know what he did in the NBA. And I'm not trying to say Bamba is going to wash out like Thabeet did. I actually think Bamba has a chance to be a solid player. Like, he's...
Yeah, he'll be around for a while.
Yeah. For his, like, you know, in his defense... You know, he got COVID. He's clearly had a lot of issues that he's had to deal with physically to get right and really, like, get back into game shape. It seems like he's looking pretty good this year. I know he had a crazy, like, 5-block game against the Celtics when they weirdly decided they were just going to, like, keep trying to shoot over him, which, you know, good luck with that. But, like, yeah, like, I mean, this was one of those guys, right? I remember they started showing him shooting at the gym, right? They're like, oh, look at his range, look at the shot. And I was like, you know, he shot, like, what, 50-something% from the free throw line in college. He didn't really shoot much at all in college. And this wasn't like a Carl Anthony Towns thing where he went to college and the coach was like, oh yeah, you can shoot, but you're not going to shoot for me. This is like, he went to college and he didn't shoot because he couldn't shoot. Like, it was not his thing. And yeah, I didn't get it. I agree with you on the vertical pop. Like, I didn't see that either. I didn't see much upside in terms of like feel as a passer or anything, which is okay if I also believe that you can be like an elite defensive five. And the biggest reason I didn't like him as much as a lot of people did is, yeah, he's got these great physical tools, but he's not really like a fluid athlete. He's not a bad athlete, but he's not like a fluid athlete. Like, you compare how Mitchell Robinson moves to Mo Bamba, and it's like it's totally different, right? Like, it's completely different how Mitch moves.
Or even someone like Kristaps before injury. Yeah. He was much more fluid on defense.
Yeah, and even with him, there were limitations, right? Like, how he can, like, how you would use him, how you can cover for him. But yeah, that was my thing with Bamba. I just didn't see like I didn't understand the vision that people were trying to like put on him. Like, oh yeah, no, he can be this type of player. And I'm just watching him, I'm like, what? Like, wait, what are we talking about here? Yeah, I think he was definitely my lowest ranked big of that kind of like
that group
crust of guys, because it was Jaren Jackson Jr., Wendell Carter Jr.,
Bagley,
Ayton, and then
that's really it.
Yeah, those were the bigs in that spot. So, like, I liked him the least. I think I liked Ayton the second least, so who cares what I think maybe at that point. and then I had, like, Wendell Carter, then I had Jaren Jackson. No, I liked Jaren Jackson Jr. the most, then I liked Wendell Carter, then I liked Bagley.
Theo, what did you think about Bagley back then?
Very low on Bagley. I did think, but I did like him more than Bamba. I'll just say that. I just want to be clear. I liked him more than Bamba. Like, Bamba, you don't escape from that. I liked him more. But with Bagley, I think the production was definitely there, right? I mean, the dude was amassing some serious stats. He was a great rebounder. Great finisher, but I think what held me back was, I guess, the alligator arms. Like, he had some really short arms, and I did not believe in the jump shot. So I think I always thought that when he came into the league, he would be able to score, right? But I didn't think he would have a defined position, like, in terms of who, because he was too small to play center.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't think he could out on the perimeter at all. So I always felt like this dude will be able to come in and score, but I don't know if he'll actually contribute to a winning team. I mean, he hasn't even been able to stay healthy, so I guess that's a moot point on the whole. But
I'm with you. I kind of thought he was in like the Amari Stoudemire family tree, but like bootleg version, where I was like, he's so, like, I remember being impressed with his speed and his like jump speed and second jump, and he could clearly rebound. But
second jump was crazy,
right? But even with all that, I remember being low on him because I was like, I just didn't like the idea back then of, like he couldn't play center to me. So I was like, what do you do with the four? Like, I just viewed him as a very, I think I back then I labeled him as like a, not bad, but just like high risk, high reward. And it was one of those guys, like kind of how Schwinn said it earlier, where I'm like, I'm glad the Knicks aren't picking up there, even though I want Luka, because it would be scary to think about picking him or Ayton or whatever.
I'm almost positive Bagley would have been second on their board too.
Yeah.
I know in my heart that, like, you know, you got Perry and Mills there just talking, like, just looking at
Duke.
His McDonald's. Oh, look at this McDonald's All-American film. You know, like, it's so good. I Bagley was, he was weird. Like, I could definitely see the vision with him. Like, I got it. I didn't like Theo mentioned, the wingspan scared me. And then also, like, a zero defense four who probably needs to be at the five on offense to be great. Didn't love that. I know that somewhere listening to this in Australia, friend of the pod, James Boo is
fuming.
Fuming and writing up a Twitter thread with clips of Marvin Bagley playing acceptable defense.
I remember I was thinking, like, it might be okay because we have Kristaps. like if we did find ourselves in that situation.
Yeah. No, I mean that was the that was why we always had a thing for like Julius Randle. Right? Yeah. We were like, but him and Kristaps would be awesome together. I still think that, by the way. They definitely would be awesome together. But yeah, it's just like it's really, really interesting to look back at this draft. And actually, like moving on, some guy, like another guy I really want to talk about. We didn't even talk about Michael Porter Jr., by the way.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. For me, that shit was actually like pretty open and shut. But I did learn a lot from it in retrospect for several reasons. For me, I just wanted him. I was like, no, with the injury, I was just like, nope.
Yeah, I'm still okay with, like, I don't care. Like, I really don't care. The injury stuff was real. Like, clearly many teams agreed. So it wasn't like some bullshit thing that then, like, you know, I mean, he started giving out his medicals the night of the draft because he got wind. Like, oh shit, like, I am actually not going to get picked by the Bulls because that's where he wanted to land, if I remember correctly. No, but the guy I really wanted to talk about, he's not even in the NBA anymore, is Zaire Smith.
Wait. Before we get to Zaire, I want to finish a few thoughts on Michael Porter Jr.
Yeah.
Theo,
yeah.
What did you think? What were you on him?
Michael Porter Jr., well, like Schwinn said, the injury stuff was real. So I obviously was very, I took a lot of pause to that. But I mean, we didn't really have much film on him, right? He only played like how many games in college? Like three, if all of that, maybe two or three.
Something, yeah.
His high school film, they were talking about him like he was the next KD. I never really saw that, but I did see a guy that could score. And I always said that if his shot was real, which it looks like it is real, that he would be pretty unstoppable in the league. I wasn't sure if it was real back then. I just thought he was a guy that liked to shoot. Maybe he would shoot like mid-30s. I don't think that's elite, but it looks to be borderline elite now, so that's good for him. I always thought he was a, like, and that's the next thing, like, the version of Knox that we thought we were getting, I always thought Michael Porter Jr. was a actualized version of that. Like, that was the Knox that people thought existed rather than this version that we have now.
Yeah, that's fair. That's totally fair. His high school stats were literally, it looks like, it's like the greatest, he has some of the like the greatest high school stat lines ever. It's like he averaged like 36 or 37 on like 50 something, 60 something. It all just looks made up because he was already 6'11" and could shoot and could jump and all that. And what I kind of agreed with you where I was like, he always got the KD comps because he's tall and could shoot, but like I didn't see it. I would watch him, and I remember, I kind of overreacted. I was like, this dude can't handle the rock like that. Like, his handle's kind of trash. And, like, I'm like, how is he gonna be, like, this Paul George, Kawhi, KD type wing scorer, you know, if he can't even dribble the ball like this? And that what I undervalued was, like, it was partly, like, not fully grasping where the NBA was going with, like, quote-unquote positionless and all that stuff, guys like him running. Like, I couldn't even envision him running around screens to get most of his threes, let alone running around screens to get threes from some fucking 7-foot overweight, you know, European MVP or whatever. Like, so I my brain just wasn't imaginative enough to see what use a almost 7-foot sniper who can move but can't dribble, even if he couldn't play defense. Like, I couldn't imagine the way he is used now and the things he is good at now. So, like, that one was, like, I just viewed it as binary. Like, he's not what people are saying, Kevin Durant. Therefore, I don't see it. And I just kind of stopped there.
But I guess when you look at it, I mean, he couldn't end up in a better situation than what he is in right now. I mean, he has to do absolutely like minimal self-creating. Mm-hmm. So everything is basically spoon-fed him, more or less. He's sort of like a 6'10 Klay Thompson without the defense, if you really think about it.
Yeah, and with rebounding like a 6'10 guy. Like, yeah. It's a perfect role for him. All right, cool. MAGA Porter Jr. There you go.
Fuck him, by the way.
I also heard that, like, I don't want to say it was a decisive factor, but his interviews, he was definitely tripping for reasons related to him being MAGA Porter Jr. And that was also another thing that may have caused them to drop, because NBA players, I mean, NBA front offices care a lot about those interviews. But yeah, Zaire Smith. I know this was a – he's had – I mean, that was a weird time on the internet, was the Zaire Smith discourse, because a lot of people on draft Twitter at the time loved him because his stats – he was just great by some models. He was like a weird power guard who couldn't shoot but was still like sort of efficient and like a winning player. And like it was weird. It was kind of like – I don't know if there's been any player like that since, but like, it was weird. I just remember being like, I get the models, I get the numbers, but that shit doesn't seem to make sense to me, even with all his hops, because what the hell position is he going to play? Like, I couldn't conceptualize what it working out looked like for him. So I'm curious how you all viewed all of that conversation.
I don't remember specifically. I remember like being wowed by his athleticism. But one thing I didn't get the hype, because I was like, can he shoot? Like, he can't shoot. Okay. Can he dribble? Not really. Okay. He's 6'4" as a guard, so he's not really like a wing. Okay. He doesn't really seem like he has like a great capacity to add weight and become like a brolic dude. Okay. Doesn't really have any great playmaking instincts. Like, what? Like, it just felt like a guy who, I mean, Prez, I know you love the NFL so much, but like, they do have like an NFL combine, obviously, like the NBA has a combine, and there's always like a few guys every year who like run the fastest, test out great in all the athletic drills, and bench press like way better than anybody expected, and they get like overdrafted, right? And to me, Zaire Smith was a guy who's like, I can understand how he would look so impressive as kind of like in a gym, empty workout setting, just having him like go through motions and stuff. Like, I can see that. I get it. I just didn't really like, I didn't understand the hype. And I remember like, look, let's be real. When the Sixers made that trade, so they drafted Mikal Bridges at 10, then they traded down to Phoenix for the 16th pick, which they used on Zaire Smith. And they got another future first out of that. People praise them for that. People love that. Draft Twitter loved that. You know, there were a lot of people on draft Twitter who loved Zaire Smith as a prospect. I just didn't get it, because I was like, I mean, his entire skill set.
They loved him even more than Mikal, and they loved Mikal.
Yeah, and the thing that didn't make sense to me is I was like, Zaire's like entire skill set is like, he does like power forward stuff, but he's the size of a guard. And it's not like, this isn't like a Charles Barkley thing where he's 6'5", but just like a fucking bowling ball, right? So you're like, okay, yeah, you can get away with him being an undersized four. No, he's just like, he was definitely a two guard, and you were like, okay, but like, nothing you do is like enough, like, it's not good enough to be a two guard. So I have no clue what kind of lineup or system or whatever that he was going to be good in, and it sure as shit wasn't going to be playing off of Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, who desperately needed shooting around them. Yeah. So I mean, and he's had a lot of health issues too, so hopefully he gets his career back on track, and maybe that did damage that he couldn't really recover from, but hopefully he gets it back on track. But like, I'll never get that pick really for them, and just like the insane hype around him at that time, I think was really overblown. I mean, I'm sure I fell in love with him at a certain point too, but like, come the draft time, he was like a definite don't draft for the Knicks to me anyway.
Yeah, so like, looking at his stats, like, he has some of the things now that no, like, I see why some of the people who are big into the models and stuff like that were in love with him, because like, as a guard, the guy had a 5% of block rate. Ayton had a 6% block rate, right? It's 2.3% steal rate, free throw rate over 45. So you're like, man, these are all athleticism related things, but he does use them to do some winning things, like get to the line, get blocks, get steals, play defense. True shooting percent is like over 60. Like I get it, but this is why it was still important to really look at how they get to those numbers. Like, going back to Colin and SGA, it's like, how, like, they're all three of these guys had high free throw rate, but two of the three of them had handle that they used to get to the line. And it, can that transfer to the NBA? Yeah, but was Zaire Smith's like college bully ball going to transfer to the NBA? No, it's not. So that's why it's important. That was one of the lessons I learned from like looking at Zaire.
Yeah, he was a weird case. I remember I saw some people comparing him to Dwayne Wade leading up to the draft, and I was like, hold on for a second, man, buddy. Like, I definitely did not see that. And I guess you guys hit the nail on the head. It's like, how do you get those numbers? I mean, his scoring rate wasn't really that high. Like, he didn't average a bunch of points for 36. So it's not like he was just getting a bunch of touches and just going to work. And, you know, I mean, he had good intangibles in terms of like blocks and steal rates. And then he seemed like a decent enough rebounder. But I remember watching the film and I was like, I mean, this dude can't handle, just like what Schwinn said, can't handle, can't shoot. And it's like, how is he going to actually be an impact guy the way these guys think he probably is? So I never really saw that. His splits are insane. But yeah, I never really saw the type of impact that he was thought he was going to have.
All right, going down the list a little bit. I guess we should talk about Luka for like a second, but like, I'm pretty sure this is like the shortest part of the podcast. Like, I think everybody on Twitter was pretty much like, please, this guy needs to be number one. He seems...
Not everybody. RP3 Natural.
Oh my God.
I think Alonzo Trier is more of a dog than Luka. So.
Oh my God, I forgot about that. Gosh, that's like the coldest draft take in the history of the internet. Maybe
you should not. We should not.
Right.
It's like everybody messes stuff up. Everybody messes stuff up with like player evaluation, especially in the draft. That's one that like in real time you knew that was insane. Like, it was like, wait, he's a second round pick? Like, what are you talking about here?
That's a take that would get you fired. Like, if Luka had dropped to 10 and you was drafting at 10, you would take Alonzo Trier over Luka. That's basically what you're telling me.
Yeah, right. It's like, yeah, I mean, look, Luka clearly should have gone one in that draft, as good as DeAndre Ayton has been. I think Luka is clearly the best player in that draft. He's a generational talent. The lucky thing for a lot of these teams at the top, and just throughout this draft, though, other than the Knicks, because we decided to be fucking idiots, is you could get good talent and good value at various points. So, like,
Ayton, a deep draft.
Yeah, like, Ayton is perfect. Like, if Luka didn't exist and they had taken DeAndre, nobody would kill them for that, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, DeAndre Ayton is a perfectly acceptable.
It shows you how perfect of a traditional pick he is, that mm-hmm. even though they took him over Luka, they still don't really get killed for that. Yeah, this 100%. isn't like Bowie over Jordan.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's an instructive draft though too, because who went number one? Hakeem.
Right.
Nobody's gonna
exactly,
kill.
Exactly.
Nobody kills Houston for that. Like, they're not like, oh my God, yeah, like they would have won six if they had Jordan. It's like, okay, yeah, but we didn't take Jordan. We took Hakeem, we won two, so who gives a shit? and who knows, they probably win more if their entire team didn't get suspended in the '80s for being addicted to cocaine. But, like, yeah, I mean, look, there's value all throughout this draft, right? I mean, even if you just look at the picks after Knox, right? McCall, Bridges, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Miles Bridges, those three right in order. Then you have Michael Porter Jr. at 14, Dante DiVincenzo at 17, Herter at 19. Keep going. Even Grayson Allen at 21. Like, I thought he was going to be a bust after his first year. He's at a like,
even the super mid players like Troy Brown or Mo Wagner, Anthony Simon shot 45% from three.
Shamit. Robert Williams III at 27. I mean, you can keep going. Even like Javon Carter at 32, like that's a good outcome. Jalen Brunson 33, Devontae Graham 34,
Gary Trent.
Yeah, Mitchell Robinson 36, Gary Trent Jr. 37. Like, this was just a draft.
Your son, DeAnthony Melton.
Yeah, dude, I loved him in that draft too. That was a great pick.
That actually reminds me of a question that I have to ask everybody on this series. Is there anybody outside of like the lottery who you guys were like irrationally obsessed with for good or bad?
In this draft?
Yeah.
Let me think. I mean, I was pretty high on Lonnie Walker. I wouldn't say I was irrationally like obsessed with him though. Just looking. I really like Eli Okobo.
Really? I really like, you were just fully on the French guard wagon at the time.
Well, I like lefties. I liked his game. Like, I liked that he had a handle and he could create and all this kind of stuff. I saw the vision with him. I wouldn't say I was irrational. Melvin Frazier. I was so high on him. I was so high on him. Like, I loved him.
No cap. Like, you have to remind me who the fuck Melvin Frazier is.
Melvin Frazier was a wing from Tulane. He was a wing from Tulane, like, super bouncy. He had upped his 3-point shooting percentage that final year that he was at Tulane. I just was like, to me, I was like, this guy is like definite first round value.
And
like,
he got taken right before the Knicks pick. Were you like tight?
I was when I was watching it, because I was out at the bar watching it. I was like, I wasn't like, I mean, I look, when it comes to the draft, I've just come like, to the point where like, where it's like, I was like, oh God, that sucks. But then we took Mitch, and I like knew enough about Mitch where I was like, okay, this is like, I get it. This is fine. But yeah, I mean, I loved him. I loved Jared Vanderbilt. I like loved Jared Vanderbilt.
I think everybody liked prospect Jared Vanderbilt.
Yeah, like I wrote a huge prospect profile on him. Like, he's like, I called him, I think, poor man's Lamar Odom. I still love him. I think he's like such an interesting, he's fun legit player. Yeah, and I mean, D'Anthony Melton has definitely become my guy from this draft, which no one else will ever repeat that sentence.
Theo, anyone for you?
Yeah, I was very high, believe it or not, on Bruce Brown. I saw, like, it was weird. I saw some rust in him, right? Like, he obviously was a anemic scorer in Miami, but like, he was like all over the floor, and he just did a little bit of everything. Like, he defended. He rebounded. He played some point for them.
Yeah, he did. He did play some point.
I like, this dude, he can be a player. I really wanted us to drop him in the second round. I thought he could have been a player. Maybe like in a Marcus Smart type of mold. Obviously, I did not think he would play small ball center, like what he's doing right now at Brooklyn. But I thought he would have an impact no matter where he went. And I guess that's one of my small draft events.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because if you think about it, like with him doing the crazy small ball center rebound and set a pick and roll to the rim, if magically you could give Russell Westbrook a potion and tell him you must do this stuff, like you must do Bruce Brown Brooklyn stuff, he would fucking kick ass at it.
Yeah. Oh yeah, he'd be awesome at it. He'd be
incredible.
Yeah, he'd be awesome. The problem being is convincing Russell Westbrook to do that stuff.
Exactly.
The other guy, there are a few, actually, even the undrafted guys in this draft are pretty interesting. You've got Duncan Robinson. You've got Jayshon Tate. Alonzo Trier, who thankfully is out of the league now. Utah Watanabe, a guy I really like. If you can figure it out, between Jared Vanderbilt and Utah Watanabe, I have a type. But yeah, like I mean, I think there's some interesting dudes from this draft that went undrafted too, who have like found a way to kind of bounce around the league. And you know, in a couple of cases, I mean, look, Duncan Robinson has been great, right, for Miami. And then you've got like Theo Pinson, legend, New York Knicks legend. I like Kenrich Williams too. He's still in the NBA. He's on OKC, but he was an undrafted guy in this draft also.
He had some big numbers.
Yeah, I mean, he was. I think Stingy was like all he was. I think he was really in on Kenrich.
Yeah, my guys were all, like, the very predictable guys. It was, like, Anthony Simons, and, like, I remember I also liked Eli Okobo a little bit, and I loved, I was a big fan of Troy Brown. He just seemed, like, he seemed weirdly, like, what he is now. I just thought he'd be, like, a better version of that.
I think he had a terrible development situation. Like, he clearly has more ball skills than he was allowed to show in Washington. I mean, that was like kind of the entire thing with him, right? Is he ran point as a wing in college, and then he goes to a team with John Wall and Bradley Beal, and like, you know, their entire thing is trying to convince Bradley Beal to stay there for the last like 4 years, so they're not really committed to like trying to get Troy Brown Jr. on ball reps and figure stuff out. Like, I hate giving the Bulls credit, but I thought that was like a decent pickup for them, even though they gave up Gafford in that deal, which I don't love. I mean, I think that's flat out like a bad trade-off, which is it's the rare center for a wing trade-off that I don't like. But yeah, I mean, look, I think if I had to guess what Prez's board was, it was like Luka, Trey Young, SGA, and then everybody else can just like fuck.
No, I was too low on SGA because I was too blind to like. I was like, he has like, his game wasn't flashy. It was effective, so it wasn't enough. Like he was too efficient. He didn't have enough unnecessary dribbles for me, which is why I loved Anthony Simons, even though he didn't play. Because I was like, first of all, Anthony Simons looked like he's 12. So I was like, if he's doing these windmills from the free throw line when he's 12 and his shot looks good, imagine when he's 18. Like, I was just, he just seemed like the classic Presby high ceiling kind of dude. But like, this is also like after about the 15th pick, I really didn't give a fuck. Like, I started looking for second round guys, but that in between area, like 15 to 30. You know, like, I wasn't writing for a website. I was just some dude commenting on posting and toasting. So I was like, I'm not going to research all these dudes who we're not going to pick and are going to be gone by the time our second round pick is. So, like, I don't know anything about, like, Landry Shamet or Robert Williams or Chandler Hutchinson or Josh Okogie or Jared Vanderbilt.
I think Shamet was a guy a lot of draft people liked because he ran.
Yeah, they loved him. Right?
They loved Shamet. A lot of people liked Herter, too.
Yeah. I didn't know about Herter.
They love Hutchinson.
Oh, and yeah. Hutchinson, yeah. What happened to him? Is he good?
No, he's just been hurt the entire time, I feel like, in the league. And I remember the big thing about that was like the Bulls gave him a promise. So he was never getting past 22.
All right. Well, I'm trying to think who else here we should get into. I mean, the Duncan Robinson thing is probably the most interesting of the undrafted guys, but there's not really much to say about that. Like, the guy was
he's like, he was athletic. I mean, look, his development track is crazy if you look at it. Like,
it's crazy.
He played at like a D3 school. He didn't get a D1 scholarship, so he was at Williams College. He got one offer, I think, to transfer to Michigan because John Beilein like loves players. Like, he knows how to use shooters, right? He knows how to use them even if they're athletically deficient, which he absolutely is. Duncan Robinson is clearly a deficient athlete. But then he's like awesome at Michigan. He was great basically his entire time there. You know, they get to the NCAA championship game. You know, he's awesome. But like everybody, he's like the typical college shooter guy. We were like, yeah, he's great in college. Is he going to be able to do this in the pros? Is he going to be able to get off that shot, get the airspace, all that stuff? He's just an outlier shooter, like flat out. Like, you can't predict that. You can't, I have a tough time knocking anybody for doing it because I watched him basically his entire college career and I was like pretty convinced he's not an NBA player. So, I mean, look, that was something a lot of people thought. And you know, like I who knows if he develops the same way in another team, because I know that like in Miami, Spoelstra basically had to like beg him to shoot. They were just like, they had to keep telling him like, if you're open, shoot it. And if you don't shoot it, like you're getting pulled from the game. Like, the entire point of you on the floor is that you can shoot. So just shoot the ball.
Yeah.
And now he has no conscience, so good for him.
Yeah, that was – I'm glad you brought it up, Sean, because that was really weird. It was like he was a shooter that was gunshot. Like, he never really shot the ball at a high volume. And you could understand if that was the case, why he went undrafted, because a guy that talented as a shooter, if you don't really actually shoot, no one will really know how good of a shooter you are. But I think Miami was a perfect spot for him, like all around, like, I think he fits seamlessly into their motion style offense. And he sort of incrementally added to his game a little bit more as the years went by. You know, he could actually put the ball on the floor in straight line drives. You know, he could finish at the rim if it's uncontested. You know, he's added little scoop lifts and stuff like that to his game. So I think any other team, I don't know if he gets used that way. So, yeah, kudos to Miami for actually picking him up and figuring out a way to use him properly.
Yeah, that's I would say that's probably one of the biggest themes from this draft. It's just like the situation being such a huge deal for a lot of these guys, for better or for worse. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, these second contracts getting handed out. Guys have new coaches and stuff like that. So we'll see. You know, the top five or six guys in this draft will probably remain the same, in like not by draft pick top five or six, but like by how good they are right now. But like after that, like the group of like Miles, McCall, Dante, Herter, like Allen, Okogie, like there's a lot of these guys and Bamba, Wendell, whose like career can go all types of ways going forward. So it's a fascinating crew to keep watch of. But we're hitting that hour mark, so I'm going to wrap us up here. Thank you both for joining us, making me read.
I got a quick question for you all before
yes.
we leave.
Yes.
We talked about situation a lot, right, during this pod.
Uh-huh.
Is there any guy in this draft that you think that Knicks regime could have gotten the best out of?
SGA. Because he was... Weirdly, I think it would have worked because all they gave a shit about was scoring. And there's one thing SGA has quickly shown is like he's going to try to get to the hoop and score. And once that jump shot came around, that was just more ways to score. So like I don't think they could have fucked that over.
Yeah, I think SGA would have been one. I think Mikal Bridges would have been one. Like how are you going to fuck that up? You know, like they wouldn't have gotten the most out of him, obviously. But they wouldn't have fucked him up. Like I mean, his shot actually got broke on his own.
I think it would have stayed broke in New York.
No, because Tibbs would have come and he would have fixed it and we would have been fine. But yeah, I mean, like, yeah, I think SGA is the obvious one. I mean, maybe Michael Porter Jr., because he just wouldn't have played that rookie season anyway.
Maybe Colin, because Scott Perry and Steve Mills would have just had, like, a full-on orgasm every time we played.
I think Sexton probably was would have gotten the most out of his time. Anyway. Yeah, they would have just given him the ball and said, "Listen, go to work, just do what you do." And I think he would have happily obliged. Happily.
Yeah, Michael Porter Jr. If you could fast forward the whole part where he skips a year and at New York gets shitted on for taking him for being wasting a pick and all that, but. That would never happen in New York, so moot point. All right, dudes, real quick again, tell the folks where they can find you all on these internets.
You can find me at TrinityPoo on Twitter. You can also find me on the Strickland, on Pod Strickland on Mondays. You can find me on Pod Strickland on Fridays with Prez. You can find me on a lot of places, I guess. All of them where I yell a lot. But yeah, I also have my RJ Barrett season preview that should be dropping tomorrow. So that should be fun.
Theo, let them know where they can find you. Did Theo drop off?
He might have.
Damn, that Bahamas internet acting up again. You can find Theo at SANDVZZO. Go follow him. He's a great, for finding out what's going on in the mind of a great draft analyst, and also for random tweets about shenanigans going on in the Bahamas. So please check him out. All right, dudes. Thanks for rocking with Draft Strickland. We will see you again in 2 weeks where we're going to move on to the next year, the 2019 draft, in our journey into the past. Later, dudes.
The New York Knicks. Here's David Stern with the announcement.
Select